I'm Ari Lynette, and today I'll be trying my best to fix one of the most infamous fast fashion beauty brands. A brand that puts out a ridiculous excess of new products while just as quickly discontinuing the old ones. A brand that has seemed to lose any concept of depth within their palette line. A brand that has gotten many a Disney collab and managed to half-ass every single one, other than possibly Baby Yoda. I'm going to stop being cryptic about it. The brand we're talking about today is Colourpop. What I want to do in today's episode is get to the root of these problems and figure out ways to fix them. If you didn't know a while back while I was still posting regularly on YouTube, I started a series called The Fix where I picked a selection of new makeup releases and I pointed out specific ways to fix them. So consider this episode of the podcast to be a larger version of that, only with a whole brand. Now, this task is a pretty gargantuan one and I didn't want to do it alone. So, I decided to get some help. So, tell us your name, what you do, and anything else we need to know about you.
Okay, my name is Alex. I have a makeup predominant Instagram account, and my username is sincerelyalex_makeup. I have had my Instagram for about 3 years or so, and I have been a regular consumer of makeup content predominantly on YouTube for the last 10 or so years. So makeup has been one of my biggest hobbies. And over the last year, I have really dedicated a lot of time to curating my Instagram feed and building a small community with folks and getting to know people along the way, following new accounts all the time. And it's been so much fun. I think makeup has been so therapeutic for me. And whenever I get to do it and whenever I get to talk with people in our community about makeup releases and conscious consumerism, it makes the hobby that much more fulfilling. So that is a little bit about who I am and how I kind of came into doing what I'm doing now in terms of the makeup community.
That was such an amazing introduction, I have to say. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, so eloquent.
Thank you.
So now for the random question. So if you don't know, whenever I have a guest on here, which I've only had one other one so far, which is my sister, but whenever I have a guest on here, I like to offer them a random question, and it's always something different, so you never know what to expect. And my random question for you today is, if you could paint the Eiffel Tower any color, which one would you pick?
Ooh. I think I would paint the Eiffel Tower like a forest green color.
Ooh. That would be beautiful.
Yeah, green is one of my favorite colors, but I understand that some folks might think that brighter versions of green can be a bit garish. But
yeah.
I think a sophisticated forest green would be neutral enough that most people would be okay with it.
That would be so beautiful, and it would kind of like blend with the nature around it, but it would also stand out really nicely.
Yes, exactly. See, you see where I'm coming from.
Totally. I kind of am split between two different ones. I'm either like paint it like a pastel pink or like the gunmetal, like wrought iron kind of. Mm-hmm. Like those are the two ideas I had. So very opposite ends. Let's just say that.
I love the pastel idea because I feel like whenever you think about Paris in particular and the imagery and artwork mm-hmm. that's produced, that's inspired by those eras, you think of like Paris in springtime and all of the fresh blooms yeah. and softness. So the pastel pink makes sense.
Yeah. And like the elegance of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm glad you understand where I was coming from there.
I love pastels, so if you wanted to paint them any shade of macarons, I would be okay with it.
Yeah, I can agree on that. So I'm really excited to have you on here today for two reasons. First of all, I really enjoy your content and your style of makeup. I just think it's really cool.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much. That's so like, sweet of you.
The way that your Instagram feed is curated is just, it's so amazing. So it's really awesome to have you on here.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I feel like ever since I found your content, which I happened to find through the Half Cousins podcast, I was so excited because I was discovering you around the same time as a few other accounts, like Doodles by the Bunny, who would
Yeah.
also do like inspired collections. And I love the spin that you have on it. I feel like Doodles by the Bunny's illustrations feel very watercolory, whereas yours take on more of like a, more graphic design element to it. I don't know anything about visual art, so I don't know if anything that I'm saying actually makes any sense, but
Oh, no, that makes sense.
yeah, but I love the way that your palette curations, it's very, you make it very clear what your inspiration is and the way that you execute color stories and other collections. You can definitely see that the vision runs through the entire collection, which I love.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I feel like having different people like executing their visions, it's so much fun seeing all different accounts doing that. So I'm always happy to see more people like that. And then I'm also just happy to see more makeup consumers in general and amazing accounts. So I found so many people over the past, well, particularly the past year. I found a lot of people that I'm just really honored to be around.
Yeah, completely. I feel like the communities that we have cultivated, because Ari and I are in a few of the same circles on Instagram and in social media, and so being able to find people who are not what people typically associate with makeup enthusiasts. You have people from all around the world, people with different preferences, people with different makeup styles, purchasing habits, but you are able to find folks that you can connect with on a level that you might not have otherwise been able to connect with had it not been for social media. So, in a lot of ways, even though social media has a long ways to go in terms of its impact on people, particularly negative impact, but social media has also been a huge resource to be able to find like-minded people and be able to share in a hobby that makes us really happy.
That's such a great way to sum it all up. I think the diversity really makes it, and I don't think that's really represented that much in the mainstream, but having all of these different voices, it's something that makes the community better. And I kind of hope that I'd be able to get different perspectives on the podcast as well, and hopefully be able to foster some better discussions with different perspectives. So I'd like to continue doing that. So you're kind of like, dare I say, you're almost like the test run of this. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I'm completely honored. I'd love that.
Yeah, so let's get on to the subject of this episode, which is about fixing ColourPop. That's kind of like the working title of it. So I know that you've been working on replacing a lot of your ColourPop products. I've been seeing that like across the crawl and through different posts. I've been noticing that. So I was really interested to see what you thought they could do to improve. And that's kind of how this episode kind of started in my head of like, okay, this could be an interesting conversation, because I think it's important that consumers can look at a product and maybe suggest improvements and kind of figure out what they do differently, which is basically what I do a lot on my account overall.
Yeah.
But I think those types of conversations could be really productive. So
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think with ColourPop, it's a really interesting case because ColourPop has done really well for themselves in terms of cultivating a social media presence. And their whoever is in charge of their social media is quite on it when it comes to posting. They can post pictures and do several in a day, and you have a variety of posts. I'm looking at their Instagram feed on my laptop right now, and they have a good mixture of video content where they have people using their products, flat lays, swatch pictures, eye close-ups, full faces. So I feel like when it comes to having a good social media presence, I think that they have done a good job of it. I think where they falter for me when it comes to like where I think they can start by improving is just the general thought and care that goes into their releases. And by that, I mean everything from how often they're releasing, what kinds of inspiration they're drawing from for their releases, color variety and inclusivity. Like, it's so multifaceted the way that I would love to just overhaul their entire company and make them better. But those are just a few broad topics where I would start.
I totally agree with that. I think it is definitely a very broad subject, which is why I think it's such an interesting subject, because it's not just like one singular point. Because they really are doing really well on social media, but there are also areas where they're really falling short, and that's what I'm hoping to examine today, so I'm very excited to do it.
Yes, me too.
So let's start with the first question, which is, when was your last ColourPop haul and what was in it?
Okay, so this is kind of a two-part question because the last item that I ever bought that was ColourPop was actually purchased on Ulta, and it was an order that had the Brow Boss pencils. I've talked about it in my stories a few times that the ColourPop Brow Boss pencil was like my go-to for like pretty much even up until now,
I remember that.
because I used to buy them in like batches. So like the last order that I made, I got like three brow pencils because I felt like, okay, at that point, this was back in January. And so at that point, I was kind of already feeling a little bit iffy about ColourPop and the way that their releases had gone up until that point. And so I was like, let me just get in this Ulta order. And then, as I go through these brow pencils, let me try to figure out what I can replace it with. So that was the last item that I ever purchased from ColourPop. If I look back at my actual purchasing from the ColourPop website, this was back in, what date was it? So this was also back in January, and this was at the very end of January. ColourPop's website was like 25% off. They were doing a sale, I think, because they reached a certain number of followers, like a followers milestone. So they were having 25% off of ColourPop, of 4th Ray, and Soulbody. And so with that 25% off, my grandma and I didn't order together. So I got all four of the neon cream gel liners that they came out with in their festival collection a couple of years ago. And then I also got a super stock shadow in the shade Ringlet, which was part of their butterfly collection. It's this beautiful orchid color. Oh my God, I love it. And then they had come out with their Luxe Velvet lip formula just before that sale. So I got it in the shade Puddin', which I ended up decluttering because I'm really not much of a matte lip person, so I don't know why I thought it was a good idea to get a shade from them anyway.
That's where we lie in the opposites, because I love like matte lipsticks.
I mean, it's a really pretty color. It's like a soft, like orangey, like a muted orangey shade, but I think I ended up decluttering it to my grandma. And then my grandma got the Mar palette, and then she got the Strawberry Shake as well as the Brush Roll and the Ultra Glossy Lip in the shade Bobbity. So it was a good little haul. And so I was like excited about getting the neon cream gel liners because I had been a goblin just collecting cream gel liners as I went. Because, when you do colorful eye looks, it's nice to have a nice, bright, colorful waterline to tie it all together. And ColourPop's cream gel liners, they had a good shade selection. And so that was a huge draw for me. I was collecting Up until that point, a lot of their cream gel liners, like a couple here, a couple there, with every order that I was making from them. And then same with their eyeshadow palettes. So that was my last ColourPop haul.
Nice. I realized that I kind of I phrased the question a bit weirdly because we don't have Ulta in the UK, so every time I did a ColourPop order, it would have to be like kind of a big haul to get like over the shipping. And also sometimes I did orders with my sister as well. But then I was like, oh wait, you have Ulta, you can get it like with other products as well and use points. So but what I can say is that my last haul was also in January. So that's quite a nice coincidence. So there's a couple of things that I don't really have that much thoughts on. The liquid lipstick in Trap, I really like that. I know that's an unpopular opinion, the ultra mattes, but I'll just lie in my trash pile. And then the Midnight Masquerade, the Disney highlight, the Megara one, I got that and I really liked that. And then I got three of the monochromatic palettes. I got the Blow and Smoke palette. I got Lilac You a Lot. And then I got Mint to Be, which had just came out. So the thing is, I like the liquid lip and the highlighter. There was no problem there. I still use them and I still like them a lot. But with the palettes, out of the three, I only really loved one of them, which was Blow and Smoke. Because I felt like it was unique, but I could also get some interesting looks out of it. Whereas the other two, I was just very iffy on. And I don't know if this is more of a me problem, but I kind of found myself underwhelmed with the lack of depth and variety. Like, I felt like I was only getting one or two different looks, or I wasn't getting, like, enough depth with them, or it was always a little bit too light or a little bit too wishy-washy. And that was a bit of a shame because I remember my first ColourPop haul and it was like the best of the best. It was like Good Sport, Salvaje, It's My Pleasure, like the my favorites, some of my favorites still to this day. And now I'm just looking and it's like it's kind of a bit of a shell of what it used to be in terms of the hauls.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that I don't actually. That haul from Ulta, I don't think was in January. I think it might have been at the beginning of June. So, yeah, so the last time I purchased from the ColourPop website and got several products from them was back in January. But the brow products that I got from Ulta were back in June because I was like, wait, there were other things that I got before June happened. So, I think that was the timeline of events. But yeah, I agree. I feel like when it comes to their eyeshadow palettes and all of that stuff, I was a major collector of their eyeshadow palettes. I think I have four of the 12 pan palettes, and my grandma, I've gotten her one or two of them, and then I have quite a few of the nine pans, and then my grandma also has a couple of the nine pans as well that I have access to because we live together. So that was like my huge draw when it came to buying from ColourPop. And it's difficult because, like, they have such a hold on the beauty community. You have so many content creators that use ColourPop as a draw for people to watch their videos because they know that people still have a wide invested interest in ColourPop's releases. So it's difficult to kind of escape it as I'm on the train of I don't want to buy from them anymore.
Yeah, I've really noticed that. It's like there are so many people who will get all of these ColourPop launches and really focus on them. And I mean, good for them if they're getting like the PR and the opportunities, but it can be very like overwhelming to see all of this ColourPop and kind of be a little bit almost disillusioned with it.
Yeah. No, completely. I think ever since I stopped following them and I unfollowed Trendmood, it is really weird being so disconnected from ColourPop's releases because at the beginning of the year, I actually talked about it when the Half Cousins had their Patreon Jeopardy episode. And I talked about it when we were in the middle of taking a break. And I was talking about how I had started keeping track of all of ColourPop's releases so that at the end of the year I could come back and report on what I found in terms of how many new products they had released, how often were these releases happening. And I was inspired because Lord Made Beauty had done a video about the ABH releases. And so she wanted to put together like a little calendar to illustrate the frequency at which they were releasing new collections. And so I thought of doing that for ColourPop. And then as the year went on and they were just having more and more issues that and just doing more and more things that rubbed me the wrong way, I'm like, you know what? I give up. I'm gonna throw my hands up in the air and just let them continue releasing things. I'm not really like invested anymore. So there have been so many releases that have kind of just like flown under the radar for me since I'm not keeping up with them as much anymore.
Yeah, that would have sounded like such an amazing project, but I definitely understood why you stopped, because there's just so much of that, like there are just so many releases, and I think it is very hard to kind of keep on top of it all.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what it's like to be on their PR list where you receive like everything. I think I used to watch Amanda Makeup just for fun, but then I unsubscribed because there were just it was just a lot of ColourPop stuff at the time happening, and so I was like, let me just unsubscribe from the people that I know do regular ColourPop content. So like I used to follow Dupe That as well. I unfollowed Dupe That. I unfollowed Makeup Just for Fun. So just to kind of like distance myself from the ColourPop over saturation. And so I remember she used to do videos all the time about the new releases, and even people on their PR list would express the same sentiment that it's overwhelming to be on their PR list because you're bombarded with releases every week, pretty much. And it makes it difficult to create content about other brands because ColourPop sort of just demands a lot of attention with the frequency at which they're releasing products and the interest that people have in seeing videos about them.
Yeah, looking at my makeup collection, I'm overwhelmed with that as it is. If I got PR from ColourPop, I'd probably have a mental breakdown because I just wouldn't be able to handle like all of that stuff and kind of keeping on top of it. It would be too much for me.
Yeah, same.
So the next question is, what has stopped you from buying more of their products? And I guess that kind of leads from the previous question. But I kind of had a little list of reasons and things that could have like acted as a way of stopping you from buying more of their products.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have like two different categories. One of them's more of a product opinion category, and one of them's more of a moral category. So with the moral category, I think it's the more important one and the more powerful one in my mind is that they just have been really dropping the ball with inclusivity. So I have a lack of consideration for people of color within their product ranges. I have the failure to acknowledge the ColourPop Me Black hashtag, and also the Sandstone palette and the cultural appropriation that took place with that.
Oh my God, yes, all of that.
Yeah, I think that, like, the thing is that ColourPop's always going to have like products that will appeal to me in ways, like certain lipstick shades and certain highlighter shades that I might end up getting like in a random little haul once in a while. But if there's something like that's like an actual moral issue, then I'll definitely listen to that more and probably just forget about those little couple of products that I might have wanted briefly. So I think that this year it's become a lot more obvious about that. And I think that that's what's made a lot of people d decide that they don't want to buy from them anymore. And now they're like color flop. So.
Yes, I love that you popularize the term color flop because or color poop. Like it's just
Yeah.
I definitely agree with with the points that you just made. And I think I touched on it a little bit earlier, but just like general carelessness when it comes to the releases, releasing things too often the fact that a lot of their collections lack any kind of creative vision or originality, especially when you think about collections like the Hocus Pocus palette. You know, you have a movie franchise that has a cult following, and you decide to put out this collection, and the cover art, fine, whatever. You know, I'm pretty sure Millie Bad to the Brow pointed out that it's the same imagery that they had for like some Oreos or something that were Hocus Pocus themes, or some kind of food item that was Hocus Pocus, you know, inspired or whatever. And licensing is probably expensive. You know, any of those items could have come up about why they didn't have any original illustrations. Fine. But the color story, when you looked inside of the palette, was so bland. It had no sort of vision. If I had just seen the color story, I would have not associated the color story with a movie like Hocus Pocus.
Exactly. You have things like Hocus Pocus, where there's basically a pre-built audience there who were pretty much ready to buy the products because of like what it's associated with and that cult following. And it's like they keep dropping the ball with the collaborations and overall a lot of the releases, just not having creative vision or depth within the color stories, and just kind of not doing things in a creative way like you hope they would.
Yeah, exactly. And then along that same vein, the Sandstone collection for sure was kind of like, okay, this is really thoughtless. And even though I'm not a part of the community that is being affected, I still think that there should be more thought and consideration that goes into these releases so that you don't even have to be at the center of this sort of unrest, you know? Like, if you wanted to do like a New Mexico or like desert inspired, or if even if you wanted to keep the name Sandstone, I feel like there are so many other directions that you could have taken it in where people wouldn't even be confusing the patterns that you're using with real native patterns. Even if it's something geometric, you could have kept a geometric motif without it resembling native patterns. And I feel like that just goes to talk into, like, that definitely delves into the area of like thoughtlessness. Like, you're not really putting as much time and thought into these collections and how you're going to market them that you end up having these slip ups where people are just like really upset at you and you have to correct them. Because I know that they responded to people in the comment section saying that the next run of palettes was going to have different packaging. And that kind of reminds me of what happened with the Blow and Smoke palette. Like, originally it was Smoke Show, and then it was Smoke and Whistles or something like that, and then it's like Blow and Smoke. And I think that one, wasn't it that they had like a dispute with Colored Rain because Colored Rain had already trademarked the Smoke Show palette?
Yeah, I think that was it, as far as I can remember.
Yeah. And so that's just another thing. Same with the Hola Chola collection that they did with Becky G. Like, there was a smaller Latinx owned brand that was actually called Hola Chola. And even though they were more clothing and apparel, not makeup, I'm pretty sure ColourPop was sent like a cease and desist, and they had to, like, they didn't have the ability to do another run of that collection. So people who didn't get their hands on it during that first launch just didn't get it because ColourPop was, you know, basically being called out for not doing their research in terms of what's trademarked and what is not. So just these instances of like, do you not have like a person on your t do you not have like a legal department to research like what names can be used and which ones cannot be used? Like, it just seemed like that's a huge oversight that could have been prevented. And so that, in line with ColourPop Me Black as well, that was another reason why I stopped buying from them, was just after I heard about the ColourPop Me Black campaign And seeing for myself the lack of representation when it came to Black creators being featured on their page, and I had been watching several YouTubers and other content creators talk about how the lack of depth that ColourPop's powder products have just across the board, like even to their eyeshadows, bronzers, blushes, foundations, concealers. Their whole product line had a huge blind spot in it. And that wasn't something that I was ever privy to because, I'm of a lighter skin tone, so I don't really see the things that people with darker skin would see. But having all of these creator friends of mine talk about how ColourPop needed to do better, it was like, wow, like you're totally right. And it just kind of turned me off to the whole thing because it felt like the wave of representation that they were trying to show later felt like they were pandering to the consumer. You had the release of the Pretty Fresh foundation that was not that long after what happened with George Floyd and the influx of Black Lives Matter related content. And the foundation was an attempt. They made an attempt at
They
being
tried.
inclusive. They tried, yeah. But even then, like you still have, it doesn't matter how many shades you have, like it all comes down to undertone, what kinds of models you're using for your campaigns, and just being more well-rounded with your product offerings. And they weren't doing that either. So I think that, and then the Wild Nothing collection, oh my God. The Wild Give
Yes.
Us Nothing collection. It was just all too much. Like, you really came out with these ashy palettes and expected people to be excited about it. Like, how dare you insult my intelligence like that?
Exactly. And I think what ColourPop is really lacking is the consideration, like the consideration for just the whole audience they're ignoring by releasing all of these ashy products, consideration to not appropriate other people's cultures, consideration to not like plagiarize, like just to be able to look out to other people and to listen to them. That's so important. And right now it kind of feels like ColourPop's got this idea of what it can do and what it is and doesn't really want to listen to the world around it that's responding.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's really ironic because ColourPop in the past, when they were releasing, I'm thinking about when they started releasing all of the monochromatic nine pan palettes, they would constantly talk about how, you all asked for this and you asked for this color scheme and we delivered, blah, blah, blah. Like, we're always listening to you, and taking suggestions from their community and all of that stuff. And it's like, okay, that's cool. People were asking for a green palette and you delivered on a green palette. But now people are asking you for more than that. They're asking you to be more thoughtful with your releases. They're asking you to create products that include them because you clearly want their dollars, but you're not doing that. They're asking you to be less frequent with how you're releasing products, and you are not doing that. And so it seems like they kind of cherry pick what times they want to actually listen to their consumers and which times they don't, which I understand in some capacity is a result of being a business and having this business model of, wanting to be the fast fashion of the makeup industry. Fine, whatever. But don't sit here and say that you listen to your consumers when there are so many instances of not doing that.
Absolutely. I just agree with all of that. I think you really summed it up. I think another thing is that they were really pushing, like, when they brought out the yellow palette, like, we all know you wanted this and you were waiting for this. But when everyone's asking for restocks and, like, not for them to not discontinue certain products, they're just like, oh, I'm sorry, what was that? We don't hear anything. That kind of is what it feels like, because it just feels like they're just
kind of covering their ears whenever they don't want to face up to certain things, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
So, challenge. What do you think was their last, like, really, really good release?
Okay, so I posted about this on my Instagram a couple of weeks ago, and I will repeat it here. I will die on the hill of saying that they peaked at the Good Sport collection.
Honestly, I have the Good Sport over there right now, and it's a legend palette. It's one of my absolute favorites. So I have to say, I can agree with that.
Yeah, I love the Good Sport palette so much. That was their fall 2018 palette. I don't think I got anything that was in the rest of that collection. Like, I didn't get any of the lip products or anything like that. But that was arguably one of their best palettes, if not the best, because it had zero ashy shades. The color story was actually creative. And it actually stands out amongst all of their other palettes. And I don't think that that's something that you can say about a lot of their other products because their color stories get repeated so often that the Good Sport palette was my favorite because it didn't look like anything else that they had already come out with.
Definitely. And the thing is with the Good Sport was that it was a fall palette. Like it was like it had that color scheme that just screamed fall, and I don't think they've ever measured up to that in the like the following fall seasons. It's always just been this could have been released any time of the year.
Yeah, like I look at the Good Sport palette and I compare it to their fall collection from last year, which was I think it was the whatever palette. Those colors were pretty, but it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't anything special. It could have been released at any time of the year. It could have been a Valentine's Day palette. I mean, the whatever palette and the X's and O's did look very similar. So the fact that it was their fall palette was like, where is the creativity in this at all?
Yeah, it's like competent palettes, but nothing interesting. And I'd like to see a little bit more of the interesting. That being said, it feels like nowadays they're kind of slacking on the competent as well. So it's like I'd be thankful to see just one of those things at this point.
Yeah, it's been I'm looking through their feed right now to try to see if there was another collection that was good from this year, but I'm having a hard time thinking that any of these are good because like I said, a lot of their eyeshadow palettes have just been really ashy looking, and I want them to stop that. They need You have the means. And that's what I think is so upsetting as well, is we know so much about ColourPop and the inner machinations of their business and how they can produce everything in-house and they have a fast turnaround time on things. And you're kind of exposing yourself because if you're telling us that you have all these resources to turn out collections in a matter of days, why are you not doing better?
So I do really like the Blow and Smoke palette. I think out of the palettes that I have, it was the last really amazing one that I got. And I think that they've done nice releases at times. Like the So Jaded palette, I think is decent for what it is. Like the Sunshine palette is okay. The Baby Yoda palette is actually okay. I'll say that. But it's becoming like more the exception rather than the norm. Like it's just a lot of the other releases are just either very bland or very non-inclusive or both, and that's what's concerning me about it. Like the tie-dye collection, like those colors I would have really liked, but I was just seeing all of like the reviews and stuff, and it was all so light and like not very inclusive at all. And I feel like even though I like that concept, the execution let it down.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that they, with the tie-dye collection, they fell into the excuse of, well, they're pastels, they're supposed to be light.
Oh my gosh, that infuriates me so much. It's like just because it's pastel doesn't mean that you can just make it like ashy. Like you can make pastels that work for everyone. And it's actually not that uncommon to see it because, like, Sugarpill has some. There are a lot of indie brands that are doing that. Like, it's a little bit difficult, but it's not that difficult.
Yeah, exactly. That collection, I'm pretty sure that was one of the first things that they released after their blanket statement in response to Black Lives Matter. And I was like, really? You're gonna follow up your statement with these palettes that no one with a medium to rich skin tone can use? That's kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah, I really think that that was really bad timing, but also I think that either way, they should have done a better job to make them inclusive.
Yeah, definitely. The
Definitely.
Blow and Smoke palette did catch my attention. It was one of the last palettes that I felt like I could see myself buying because I don't really own any gray eyeshadows. Like, I have a few sporadically throughout my collection, but I don't have anything like the Blow and Smoke palette. So I did consider it. But I don't think I would have gotten much use out of it, even if I had depotted it and used it in, various palette building posts. I think that it wouldn't have gotten as much use. So I'd much rather collect cool toned singles for now.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it depends on whatever works best for your collection and how you use makeup. So I get that. Do you think that there was like a point in time where this started? I'm just curious to know because I was kind of thinking of like trying to pinpoint like when everything turned to shit, so to speak. So
Yeah, I don't know if there was a point in time that I think things started to go downhill for them. I would say, I immediately, because I'm looking at their feed right now, I'm thinking of the introduction of the pressed glitter is
yeah.
part of when they started to go downhill. I don't remember the first palette that they did that had a pressed glitter. I want to say it was Sweet Talk.
I think you might be right there, because I don't remember any of them before then.
Because, wait, the Sweet Talk palette was their spring 2019 collection. And the monochromatic series, they came out with the orange and the yellow one in the summer of 2019. And I only know that because I took it on vacation with me. So I think that the introduction of the pressed glitter was really where things started to get a little bit iffy. I know that
Yeah.
they released their pressed glitters in the festival collection with like the four neon like single shadows, and then they came
Yeah.
out with pressed glitters, and I was like, okay, fine, whatever, they're singles. If people want to buy the pressed
Yeah.
glitters, then they can get them. And then they incorporated them into the Sweet Talk palette along with a Super Shock shadow, and Sweet Talk was the first time that they had ever added a Super Shock shadow into an eyeshadow palette, because before we were all under the impression that they were just going to dry out if you didn't like tightly cap them in their little jars. And so I think that the introduction of the pressed glitter is probably where I would start to track their downfall, because ever since then, there have been countless palettes that have come out with pressed glitters, and I know that there are people out there who don't really have an issue with pressed glitters, but it does seem like a very loud majority of people are not into the pressed glitters because, in a lot of ways, it cheapens a palette because it doesn't cost that much money to just put a glitter in place of an actual shadow.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes brands will kind of just rely on press glitters to kind of maybe save a little bit of money. But at the end of the day, it makes a lesser experience for the consumer, mostly because a lot of them won't want to use it on their eyes.
Yeah, or you have people that do use it on their eyes and might risk hurting themselves because they don't know how to work with a glitter. They might not know that it's important to use a glitter glue, or that you might want to be more careful using it around your eyes because, these pressed glitters, they're not like they're pieces of microplastic. They're not micas. They're not things that are going to just dissolve in water. So people, especially because ColourPop, with their price point and their outward persona, they definitely appeal to a lot of young folks. I think with the packaging, with the types of intellectual properties that they collaborate with, they definitely have a huge market of young teenage consumers. And so if you're using your platform to market to a younger audience, then I think that having something like a pressed glitter, where people might not know like the eye safety that comes with using a pressed glitter, it feels irresponsible.
Definitely. And I was kind of thinking of what kind of set the ball rolling with the color schemes as well, because I think that the pressed glitters, that's definitely a reason. But I was also thinking of like the Sailor Moon release, like how that was one of the big examples of an intellectual property being kind of licensed for a palette. And where I started to notice people were saying, oh, I feel like they've got this a bit wrong. I felt like that was I believe that was pre-pandemic or pre-shutdown.
Yeah,
I feel like there was definitely an issue with the color schemes before the pandemic, but I feel like afterwards they really accelerated with that. Like, the problem definitely got a lot bigger once more post-pandemic releases were coming out.
And yeah, I had a folder that I still have it on my Instagram when I was saving everything in there. And it said that the ColourPop and Sailor Moon collab came out at the end of February. So the post is from February 20th. And I'm pretty sure, like, not that long after Sailor Moon was their Mulan release, because the Mulan release was, like, right before their factory shut down. So I agree. I think even back to their collab with, their first Disney palette, that first Disney palette was so disappointing. I looked at it and I'm like, where is any of the variety? I get it. Okay, you want, maybe with these intellectual property collaborations, they might not have full reign of whatever colors they choose to include. Like, I fully believe that if you're doing a palette with Disney, I find it hard to believe that Disney wouldn't be trying to have control over the colors that you're putting into your palettes. I fully believe that. Definitely. However, I still think that there are ways that you can incorporate color into neutral palettes that so many other brands have done a great job of doing, that I feel like you can still operate in a color scheme that is wide, that has a wide appeal, and still make it interesting. But almost none of their Disney palettes are interesting in the slightest, and it's a crime, honestly. Yeah,
I feel like they've pretty much dropped the ball on every single Disney collab, except for maybe the Baby Yoda, but I still think that could be improved either way. But what I find really interesting is that the day that Wild Nothing came out, that was, like, I felt like there was a big shift. Like, the narrative really shifted from ColourPop could do better to ColourPop needs to do better. I don't know if I'm the only one who felt like that was, like, a real turning point for people's perceptions.
I agree. I think that the Wild Nothing, what really set it off for me was our good friend Day from Legally Black Beauty posting on her stories the day that Wild Nothing collection released. For anyone who is listening and doesn't follow Legally Black Beauty on Instagram, I implore you to do so, because
she's awesome.
Day is doing the Lord's work. She really is. I love her so much. Her swatch pictures, the quality of the pictures and content that she's putting out is unmatched. And her commentary on that Wild Nothing collection was 100% true. It was seething. It got right to the point. Like, it made it very clear that She, as a Black makeup user, saw this collection and saw that the brand did not care about who they were producing products for. And it was really weird because I do follow a few. I follow Andrea Renee on YouTube, and she's on ColourPop's PR list. And I remember watching her video when the Wild Nothing collection came to her in PR, and she was like struggling to get these shadows to show up on her. I saw the swatches. She did swatches in her video, and they looked so bad on rich skin. And I'm like, honey, you please do not feel like you have to use this palette just because it's ColourPop and people are going to want to see it. Like, I appreciate that they at least sent it to creators that have rich skin, but that doesn't necessarily make up for the fact that you produced an ashy palette like that.
Yeah, I remember everyone talking about that, and I felt like that was the point where ColourPop became ColourFlop, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
So this is another question. I'm not sure if you've like heard anything about this, but have you heard about any formula changes? Because I heard from Temptalia that there was apparently, I think with the Hocus Pocus palette, like a change to the formula and it wasn't as good. So I'm just wondering if you'd heard anything similar.
About their eyeshadow formula changing?
About any formula, really. But
I don't know. I know that it's interesting because I heard that they I feel like when they came out with the new packaging for the cream gel eyeliners, because before I owned one of them before they repackaged them. Before they used to be like in white pencils and the caps and the ends were the color of the actual pencil liner. I only had one. I got Mr. Bing because one of my first ColourPop purchases was Kathleen White's influence before I stopped watching her. And then when they repackaged the cream gel eyeliner so that the entire component was the same color as the color inside, I thought that they might have reformulated some, or heard rumblings from people that with the repackaging that they might have also improved the formula because they used to be really dry. And then they were now creamy. But in terms of other formula changes, I don't really know. I mean, I didn't start buying eyeshadow from them until they hadn't come out with Yes Please yet. So I started buying from them, I want to say their spring collection of 2017. And they had only had their pressed powder shadows for about 2 months or so before I bought from them. And so I will say that I think that their quality does not age well. I think that using some of their eyeshadows that I got in 2017, they definitely do not perform the same way that they did when I first got them. So I guess in that way, I can comment on formula changes as like formula changes as you buy the products and they age over time. But in terms of like any of their newer stuff, I haven't bought from them in a long time, so I wouldn't really be able to comment on any of their newer releases having different quality from before.
Yeah, that's fair. I kind of have a bit of a funny story about the palettes that I got in the last haul, because I noticed something strange about them. I noticed that the pans were popping out, like they weren't sticking very much to the magnet.
Really?
Yeah. I, especially with the Mint to Be and the Blowing Smoke, they were like kind of almost like halfway out. They never fully fell out, but I just found that so strange because I'd never had that problem with any of the other palettes that I got from them.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had that happen to me. I think, I can't remember what palette it was, but I think it was also one of the plastic 9 pans. Because I don't think I've ever had that with their 12-pan cardboard palettes before where the pans are coming out. But I can see that happening with the 9 pans that are in the plastic component. I think as I've depotted and rearranged things, I have had a few instances where the pans like almost don't want to go in all the way. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was an issue with other palettes as well.
Yeah, so I always found that funny, that story funny, because it was like eyeshadow whack-a-mole almost, and I was kind of trying to pop them back in, and often I'd have like shadow all over my fingers because I was trying to just making sure they didn't pop out again.
Yeah,
So
that's hilarious. I can totally picture that.
yeah. So the next question is, what do you think they should release more of, or what they should release instead?
I think that they should. I think that they should release more. I think that they should release more of their pressed powder products. So I think that they should come out with more blushes and bronzers, maybe update their formula a little bit because I have a couple of them and they are hit and miss. Some of them perform well, some of them are not as pigmented. So I think that they should definitely lean into their pressed powder face formulas. I didn't really like their pressed face powder. It was a little bit too thin for me. And as someone who has skin that leans more oily, I felt like the pressed powder wasn't really doing anything for me. But yeah, their pressed powder blushes especially, I think that they can do so much because they came out with those pressed powder blushes in the Making Mobs collection that had like a flower imprint on them, and then they also had the flower imprinted blushes from the Mulan collection. I think that they should start normalizing releasing several depths of the same tone of blush in a collection. Like, if they were gonna do the Making Mobs, they came out with two blushes and they were not even that far apart in depth and tone. So I think if they were going to come out with a Mobs collection, they could have come out with like a really light version, like a more mid-toned version, and then a really deep version. I think that that's something that brands, even outside of ColourPop, should start doing. Because if you're releasing a collection based off of a particular color, then by logic, it makes sense to make that same color work for various skin tones, and you don't really see that happening. So I think that that would be great. I also wish that they would release more of their interesting Super Shock shadows. Like, I'm biased. I happen to really like their Super Shock shadows, not so much the matte formula because they just dry out so quickly, but these really dimensional shimmery shades. I know that our friend Emily Hanhan is not so much a fan of the Super Shock shadows because of the pots, and you could easily get a similar effect with a really pretty, like indie shadow that's nice and dimensional. But I think that the Super Shock formula is what ColourPop was founded on. It was their first product, and I think they could stand to reformulate them to where they don't need to be in a pot anymore. You know, like how cool would that be if you could just put their Super Shocks into like their palette builder with powder
That
shadows?
would be amazing. That is just such a great idea, and I think it would inspire a lot more people to like put together the build your own palettes. Absolutely. Now, I heard you were talking about the blushes and like the highlighters, and I was thinking that I kind of have almost this little conspiracy that the themed collections, it kind of gives them a bit of an excuse to make very similar blush products over and over. Like, if you see a peachy blush and it's in this really nice themed packaging and it's all decorated lovely, it's easier to see that as unique than a peachy blush in the standard ColourPop compact. So I think that if they can do like a standardized line of like the blushes or the bronzers and really show that they can do that range, I think it would be a great release, but I think it would be a great way to show that they can do that kind of depth because like when you have like the blushes in like the Making Moves collection and like the Mulan collection, it's very easy for those to take the prominence and for the standard packaged ones to fade into the background and end up getting discontinued. So I just think it's an interesting conspiracy.
Our conspiracy, allegedly.
Yeah. I also have noticed something. They haven't been doing a lot of people collabs this year. The last one I remember was that Becky G collab, the Holachola collab that got pulled.
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen them do a collab with anyone since. Not even a Kathleen Lights collab.
I know.
That is really surprising.
My
she gosh. Has so many.
Like, that's the real surprise of 2020, is the lack of Kathleen Lights collabs with Colourpop.
Yeah, I think that also expanding their, I mean, it goes without saying, but, like, expanding their complexion range, like, expanding their concealers, expanding their foundations, both in the more sheer category, because I know that when they came out with the Pretty Fresh Tinted Moisturizer, they were one of the few brands that offered, I think they were offering 24 shades. I think they were one of the few brands that were offering that sort of product in that many shades, because historically brands have been trash for a long time and have only released 8 shades or 10 shades of something like a tinted moisturizer. But even if ColourPop released 24 shades, the lightest shades and the deepest shades, like the distribution along their spectrum, was still not good. So that can be translated into their concealer range as well. Like the type of undertones that they're offering, the lightest shade versus the darkest shade, and so on and so forth. Like when I was buying from ColourPop still, I bought the Pretty Fresh the tinted moisturizer and the concealer. And for their concealers, I had to mix 2 shades to get a shade that worked for me. And I just feel like we're past that
now. Yeah, definitely.
You should be offering a better range of undertones and just tones in general. Like, yes, you should have really light shades and really deep shades and have a nice distribution between them, but also have a good distribution of undertones. And most brands have not nailed that yet.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of have an overall thought about ColourPop's releases that they should probably just release less. But I also think that they should focus on getting that inclusivity right. Because once you get a really amazing foundation shade range, you don't have to like go back to it and kind of make alterations because you've got it down. So I think if they could just get that right and, you know, focus on that, that could really set themselves up to be able to do like more different releases later on down the line, because they've done the good foundation ranges.
Yeah, it also makes me think of their lip glosses, because a lot of people loved their So Juicy glosses, and people had really good things to say about their Luxe lip glosses. So why are you still releasing ultra glossy lips? Like, why are we not evolving past really old formulas and old packaging that doesn't really work for people? Like, I was salty, I will admit, when they updated the ultra glossy lip packaging to have a brush tip instead of a doe foot applicator. I was salty. I don't like brush tip applicators myself. And so when they came out with the Luxe lip glosses and they were the more stout tubes with the bigger doe foot applicator, I'm like, okay, we're growing, we're evolving. And yet they came out with more ultra glossy lips in future collections. And I'm like, what are we doing here? There doesn't seem to be much continuity, or like there doesn't seem to be much consistency. With their range, they discontinue things all the time, but it doesn't seem like they get discontinued with any kind of purpose.
Exactly,
you know what I mean? Because they'll come up with something similar where it's like, well, why was this thing discontinued if it was similar to what you just came out with?
I think that just a little bit of focus in there would do them so good. And to be able to look at what people are liking and what people aren't liking anymore and work around that, mm-hmm. I think that could really help them. But I think that that isn't the approach they seemingly want to take. They kind of just want to be more like fast fashion than be this curated makeup line.
Yeah, I agree. I think last thing that I want them to come out with more of is things in cardboard packaging. Mm-hmm. I know that the topic of plastic use and plastic consumption can get a little bit dicey because, you know, you don't want to shift the blame to the consumer when a majority of issues as they relate to the environment are the result of large corporations. Mm-hmm. But I think that they're like, I appreciate their release of their more recent collection, the Dark Blooms collection,
yes,
that has the cardboard packaging. I don't like that they included press glitters. And I know that a lot of people would prefer to have a mirror in their packaging. Mm-hmm. However, I think that there's something to be said about being able to release more palettes that are in cardboard versus their plastic 9-pan packaging.
Yeah.
I've never owned one of them myself. All of my 9-pans are plastic.
Mine too.
But I would love if they were cardboard.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that companies really need to lead the charge in having more easily recyclable packaging. Like, say what you want about KVD Vegan Beauty and what they've been doing, but their recyclable packaging of the newest palette, that is pretty good to see that they're making like recyclable packaging. And even such a thing as like making a plastic palette cardboard instead, or maybe like not including a mirror because not every palette necessarily needs one and they're harder to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would definitely be a worthwhile thing to take on, is to look at the environmental impact of their packaging.
Yeah.
So for the final question in our ColourPop fixing is, how else would you fix their issues? Because not all of their issues are necessarily product-based. There are bigger issues, I think, that ColourPop really needs to tackle. And I think what I would start with is hiring more by POC, hiring more Black and Indigenous people of colour, so they'll know what works and what doesn't. I think that would be the best start.
Yes, I completely agree. I think that hiring more diverse members of their team would greatly benefit them. I also think that working with content creators and hiring them on as consultants,
mm-hmm,
for one-off projects would be another good endeavor. I think that definitely hiring more by POC would be a great start. I think that when it comes to the breakdown, oh, that was another thing. When we're talking about pull up for change,
yeah,
that was another reason why I stopped buying from them, was because if you look at Pull Up for Change's Instagram, I don't know if ColourPop's numbers are still up, but I do recall that the largest percentage that they reported in terms of racial groups at their company, the highest percentage was Latinx. Mm-hmm. And that sounded very suspicious, because I fully believe that ColourPop included their factory workers in those numbers when Pull Up for Change specifically asked for people who are like higher level.
Yeah.
Like upper level managers, upper level supervisors, CEO, CFO, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you're likely including your factory workers in your number breakdown to skew the results away from having a majority, mm-hmm, white employee base is sus. And I didn't like that.
Yeah, that's very dodgy. And that really definitely would make people see them in a different light. Certainly makes me see them in a different light.
Yeah, so even hiring on like a diverse team of influencers to work for you, you pay them for their time, and it's like a consulting thing, that would be a great way for influencers of any platform size to build better working relationships with ColourPop, even if they don't send them PR, or even if you do get sent ColourPop PR. Like, you get PR, but you're also able to provide input in their releases without fear of backlash and without fear of getting taken off the PR list because the opinions that you express in your videos or in the content that you create with your PR might catch them off guard. Like, help them to create something that is going to be well received. And I think that that would take them very far as well. Last thing that I would probably recommend that they do would be to release less often, mm-hmm. but because that's kind of their gig, I doubt that that's something that would happen. But yeah, I guess even just like, I know that some brands have like private Facebook groups, or they extend opportunities for consumers to be part of like focus mm-hmm. groups and help with product development. And I think that that's another way that they would be able to succeed, not only just consulting with creators who know the industry really well, but also extending opportunities to the regular consumer to provide input on certain products. I think that would be great.
That would be an excellent idea. And one more thing I'd like to see is some more collaborations with Black influencers, because I'm pretty sure we haven't had one since Shayla's last collab.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely demand for it, so I'd like to see more of them.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've covered a lot today. It's been it's been a really awesome discussion. And I think that, is there anything else you want to elaborate on first, or any other things that I didn't cover?
I think that we covered pretty much most of it, if not all of what I had to think about as far as ColourPop goes. I think that I've had some folks in my DMs ask me, like, what do I think that ColourPop could do that would prompt me to want to buy from them again? And I think implementing any number of the suggestions that you and I just discussed would be a good start, and making it like something that they're really committing to, you know, because I think a lot of brands post pull up for change are doing the whole inclusivity thing as a marketing strategy, as a way to pander to people, as a way to regain the support that was lost when people identified them for their BS. And so I would like to see that it's like a long-term thing that they're actually committed to, you know, like have like a decent track record of inclusive launches, launches that are thoughtful, launches that are actually creative. Because for me, the big draw of buying from ColourPop is not only the price point, but also this need that I had to, you know, buy a bunch of their releases. They were one of my favorite brands. I have so much stuff from them that it's difficult to go through all of it and try to find alternatives from brands whose ethics you actually support. And so that's why this project of mine of slowly replacing my ColourPop products is going to be a long one. You know, I have so many eyeshadow palettes from them. A majority of my eyeshadows, even eyeshadow singles, are from ColourPop. They had such a hold on my collection because I was so enamored with everything that they were doing. I think they were like one of the first brands that really got me into colorful makeup. And so now, kind of waking up from that spell and realizing that there are other brands that do better out there and produce better quality, is just kind of like, okay, I'm having to rewire my brain to understand that ColourPop is clearly not the end all be all.
So what I usually do with brands is that I don't most of the time I don't like fully like cancel them, so to speak. I'll put them on ice for like six months or so and give them the opportunity to improve. And what I want to see is that improvement in front of me, like in writing, because I think that even though like brands often want to improve, I think it takes time. And sometimes you have to kind of step back from a brand and be like, okay, now you need to improve things before I want to shop from you again. And I think it is really that key consideration of different people, of people with deeper skin tones, of people of different cultures, and really just, if they need to, give them a seat at the table, because I feel like they really do need to give them that seat at the table to consult or to create. Like, when I do my designs, I try my best to be inclusive, but I can only go from guessing. Like, as far as I'm concerned, you need to have people of color in the room to tell them, like, this is not going to work for me. This is not going to work for people deeper than me. So I think if I had one key message for ColourPop, it's bring people in and listen to them, because that is just so important as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's going to be difficult, though, about that moving forward is that because, like, I was just looking at their Instagram. They are at almost 10 million followers on Instagram. And the problem with that is that you have so many people who, like, don't think the way that we do. You know, so many makeup users don't really think about the social or moral implications of the brands that they support, which is a position of privilege to hold in a lot of cases. If you are someone who doesn't really have to worry about a brand not producing products that don't work for your skin, then you're likely not going to consider the act of withholding your patronage from them until they get it together. So that's going to be what's really difficult moving forward when it comes to expecting a change or hoping for a change from ColourPop, because they have such a huge consumer base, and because you have so many people who love on them and buy every release and think that, you know, that they can just look past all of the brand's wrongdoings, that is going to be a huge hindrance to ColourPop's ability to grow. Because why would you grow when you have a whole fan base of people that will support you no matter what? It's the same with people. Why would people want to do better for themselves and change their problematic behavior if they have so many people on their side co-signing what they're doing?
That's an amazing analogy for that. It's like, people already love us, why do we need to change? But it's like, there are a lot of people that want to see that change, and hopefully one day we will, but it is really just a matter of time, I think, to just wait and see what happens.
Yeah, you brought up KVD earlier, and I think that that's another good example to use when it comes to people holding a brand accountable and voting with their dollar. You had Kat Von D doing all types of messy stuff on social media, and people were tired of it. Granted, a large part of that is also probably because the brand hadn't been releasing things that people were interested in to begin with, and that helped to fuel their decision to not 100%. Buy from them anymore. But if you have something like ColourPop, where when I talked to Emily Hanhan about this in the ColourPop related stream that we did a few months back, I was talking about how when it comes to ColourPop, the ways in which they are messing up are a lot more subtle and insidious than what brands like KVD and Too Faced are doing.
I think that once we can like pinpoint the issues and really bring them out into the open, I think hopefully more people will start to realize that. But I think it's a bit of an uphill battle.
Yeah, I think because ColourPop is not showing their butt to everybody online with like blatant racist slurs or blatant denial of science or blatant anti-Semitism. Like, they are doing it in a way that is very subtle and unspoken. And I think that's why so many people have a hard time with acknowledging that they have these issues, because they're just releasing things and, oh, I think it's pretty. And like, maybe you don't surround yourself or you don't follow that many creators of color. Because that can also contribute to why a lot of white passing or light skinned consumers don't really think about these things, because they're not following a diverse group of people that would otherwise be able to provide input on these releases that are not inclusive. So if you're in this echo chamber of other users, other makeup lovers who are obsessed with ColourPop as well, you're probably going to be blinded to all of the ways in which they can improve to begin with. And so you then cannot begin your journey of analyzing why you still support this brand. So it's hard. The whole topic of conscious consumerism is really challenging, because people do use makeup as a form of escapism, as a form of therapy. And so the idea of bringing in politics or social issues into the makeup industry is like, nope, I just want to close my ears off to it. Like, makeup is my escape. I don't really want to have to think about the moral implications of my makeup buying habits.
Yeah, I think that that sums so well. I think that a lot of white consumers don't really understand or necessarily feel the need to acknowledge these little microaggressions from brands. And I think education is such an important thing. And even if it's just like an Instagram story saying, this is a problem and here's why, and explaining that, that can really help. And I can only hope that people who follow me can see that and understand that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also a privilege that I have to acknowledge in myself as well, because not everyone is in a financial position to be able to buy from brands that are more affordable. It's also a privilege that I have as someone who lives in the United States. You know, a lot of our international friends are not able to buy from brands that are in other countries because of, you know, high cost of shipping and customs fees and all of that stuff. And so I understand that my position in being able to buy from brands that I consider are worth my dollar is not the case for everybody. There are people who have different skin tones who don't have as much money, and so all they can afford is what's offered at the drugstore, and that's okay. I'm talking more specifically about people who are in a position where they can choose. And using your dollar to support companies that fall in line with your personal views and what you hold to be important.
Absolutely. I think that is a great place to leave this on. And I think we can say we fixed ColourPop. Yay!
We did it.
We did it. So, before you go, I have one last question, and this is the most important question of all. Do you have anything to plug?
The only thing that I really have to plug is my Instagram for now. Again, my handle is at SincerelyAlexMakeup. I do a combination of nails and makeup and potentially a little bit of hair care as I'm starting my natural hair journey and transition into, you know, not heat styling my hair and wearing it natural and stuff. So I do a few different things on my page. I am doing a palette and polish series where I take nail polishes in my collection. If they are new, then I go ahead and review them. I wear them over the course of a week. I post about it on Mondays. And I will use that nail polish as a point of inspiration to create a color story with single eyeshadows. So I have my palette and polish series that I do every weekend. And I will sporadically post looks throughout the week that I do with other products. I will occasionally do empties videos on my Instagram stories. Same with products that I get in the mail, that I do little hauls on my Instagram stories. And currently Beauty Crawl is taking a break, but Ari and I, for the last few weeks, have been participants in the Mo and Friends Beauty Crawl, organized by Yoga with Mo on Instagram, who is an incredible human being. So most of my activity is on Instagram. So if that kind of content interests you, I would appreciate it if you checked out my page.
Yeah, I would highly recommend to everyone to take a look at her Instagram feed. It is amazing. I will also have her Instagram left in a description if you want to click down there and take a look. So, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you
today.
So much, Ari, for
really
having me on. It was so much fun. This was a really great conversation, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to sharing this podcast with everybody. Like, Mom, I made it. I was officially on a podcast.
Yes. Is this your first time on a podcast?
Technically, yes. Yes, like being a guest and having like a focused topic to talk
about.
My gosh. Yes, that would be my first podcast. Yeah, thank you so much, Ari.
That's awesome. So, you're very welcome. And thanks for being here today and taking a chance on little old me and my podcast. And if you want to share this with anyone you know, you can share it. You can subscribe to this podcast, and depending on the platform, you can leave a review. And you can also find my YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter in the description. So thank you so much for listening. It's bye from us. And until next time, keep trying your best, everyone. Bye!